Hello, welcome to Cafe Soko. My name's Dan Gold. It's a beautiful day in the town of Saskatoon. I should say city because it is. And today I've got a very special guest with me. I've got a guest who I've wanted to talk to for such a long time. Roland, I'm beyond excited to have you in here.
I'm excited to be here.
Let's start from the very, very beginning, because in the show notes for this, people will know a rough background of who you are and why you're here. But let's start from the very beginning of how we met. And I think this is quite important, because the world of IABC is an interesting one. It's one that brings people together from very different backgrounds. And that excites me. Yes, it anchors on the world of communications, public relations, and the such like. But people have very different backgrounds and approaches to why they're a member of IABC. What's the reason you got involved? And actually, even before that, did you decide to join? Or was it your company that said, hey, it's a really good idea for you to join something and go and tell us which one you want to join?
It was my decision to join. I've always wanted to be involved with a professional organization that represents our community. IABC stands up for ethical communications, and this is something that I'm very proud of being a part of. So the reason I wanted to join was to bring and improve that sort of aspect in the communications, because we see all of these things going on a day-to-day basis. And to be part of a group of or an organization that stands for ethics is a big deal.
Okay, I'm going to put something to you, and it's about the ethics of numbers and communicating about said numbers. Every time a piece of research happens, you always get something comes out on the radio, on the TV, or even in the political realm, there'll be numbers that are released stating X, Y, or Z, and then someone will jump in, there'll be an external commentator, someone at some point will say, but you can make numbers say whatever you want. You can make statistics say whatever you want. They're just twisting them. How do you produce a piece of research which is not only robust, because that's what you do and that's why you do it, but when it's presented, that the information can't be misinterpreted or twisted to say something that wasn't found either by a third party or someone who's less ethical?
Okay. I think when we're talking about numbers, I believe that it's my responsibility also to qualify the type of numbers that I'm talking about. The type of numbers that I'm referring to deal with market research, and it has nothing to do with financial or other studies that other companies do. I'm talking about market research here. I'm talking about polling. I'm talking about surveying. I'm talking about these sorts of numbers. It's a large part of the work that I do deals with public opinion research, and that's the type of numbers I'm talking about. So let's make that absolutely clear. Now, with regards to some of the best practices that goes along with this, it's also good to know the size of the sample that we're working with. So if we're working with a smaller sample size, the results can be less reliable than you have a larger sample size. So when you see a survey, when you see some research, and when you see a percentage of a certain amount of people that believe this, a good question that a researcher or a communicator or person is to say is, how big is that sample size? That's the type of conversations that I love or I enjoy looking at.
Now, I'm very excited because Roland lives in Manitoba, where I see him doing half marathons left, right, and center. We met in Canmore at a retreat for IABC when I first became involved in a leadership role, and it was amazing to meet him. But Roland has been here in Saskatoon for IABC Saskatoon's first Communicon event, and I wasn't available to go because I was presenting elsewhere, but I've looked at the social feeds, I've looked at videos, I've read a couple of people's little, you know, Facebook updates on what they experienced and what they enjoyed. Coming all that way, so what, it's an 18, 19-hour round trip from Manitoba.
It's good times.
Yeah, and I'm sure you like podcasts or something. I'm really intrigued. You've come all that way. You've delivered your message. It's part marketing. It's part educating others. because that's why we go and speak publicly. What did you gain from it, and what did people get the feel of during your session?
It felt as if people were interested in doing this kind of work to validate, support, or perhaps even test some of the work that they're looking to do. I spent a majority of the presentation towards the end of it fielding questions, talking about sampling, talking about how to reach potential respondents, talking about some of the strategies that can be used to test creative material. And these topics were very interesting to the crowd, and I enjoyed answering all their questions.
Okay, I'm going to pick one thing from everything you've just said. Testing creative. As professional communicators, we make something, and online, there's a lot of memes that go around that say, basically, make it. Don't wait until it's perfect. Make it, put it out there. If it works, it works. You learn from it. If it doesn't, you learn from it and go and do it again. It's a there's a lot of blind testing when it comes to people putting out particularly social content. Do you think there are techniques that maybe the advertising world uses that people within smaller agencies or in-house could do to make sure that they're using intelligence rather than throwing money at the wall and just seeing if something sticks? How does proper market research, how does it work with a piece of creative?
With any sort of work that we considered polished, it's best practice to have someone else look at it. That is the general consensus. At NRG Research Group, where I work, it's standard policy to have someone look at your work before you send it off to the intended person. With any sort of firm, that's you never leave it with just yourself. It always goes to somebody else. Now, the problem is, if you keep sending your work to the same people over and over and over again, there's a sort of creative mindset, or you create this vacuum of similarity between people. The idea of having someone else external, a third party who has nothing invested other than the success of this work, that's sort of the outside experience where you have someone who has literally no ties and can give a sort of different perspective. And if the vendor or the person who's looking to have this work can come across this idea with an open mind and just accept what may be said, then that's all that is. It's having an external person look at it with a different mindset. And that sort of proof can help sway or move the direction of the creative.
So it's kind of moving beyond the echo chamber, where people eventually, when they see enough of a project or they work with you long enough, it becomes, they start to think like you. They start to see the patterns in the way that you work. They become comfortable to it. And so the external validation, that external opinion, is more objective in that sense. They're not personally invested, and they try and stay distance from it. It's a perfect example. When I work with clients on particular projects, and it's about public speaking or presentation training, I don't want to see their notes or their key points before they start. Because the way I look at it, I'm going to be Joel Jane Average. I'm going to be the audience. I'm going to be the person going, okay, what do I gain from this? I might not be the target person, but I'll be the person going, okay, so if they're talking at me and they're presenting something, I'm going to make notes of what my takeaways are.
Precisely. And if you take it one step further, you want to put this creative, this piece of work in front of the intended audience after the researcher. Well, now you have the people who are going to use it. And if they can tell you honestly that they love it, they hate it, this is the way it should be, this is probably would change my opinion, this would lower the temperature of my feelings, this would raise it up and amp it up. Well, you have the people who are actually going to use it say what they really want, what you want to hear, what you may not want to hear. And
with a lot of people that I know, they will produce a piece of work, send it to someone they know and go, oh, can you just throw an eye over this and just check it? And it'll be checked for spelling or tone or whatever it is. Effectively, what we're saying is by amping that up to the next level, it's just expanding on that, having that external view, and then amp it up a bit further, which is getting that external view actually by the eyeballs and the ears of the people who are the target for said piece of communication. Yes. Surely you've got to be able to ultimately save money because it's going to be surely more effective.
Best practice is 10% of your marketing campaign, whatever it is, should be devoted to research, to understanding who you're speaking to.
I know of marketing firms who will produce something, it will go out there, and then they will measure its performance.
Which is good.
But then there may not be a follow-up campaign.
10% of that campaign should have been devoted to research, just so you can do a pre and post, a before and after. You can have benchmarks, and then we can see where it worked and where it didn't.
And that is super, super powerful information to really influence your decisions within the organization. And then really, I hate to use the phrase, but moving the needle externally, it's got to be a good thing doing that.
Absolutely, 100%. And whether that needle be to increase the temperature, I love that phrase, increase the temperature of an issue or lower it down in a crisis situation, these sorts of conversations need to happen. When they don't, then we know that someone may not be working there anymore. Maybe.
SurveyMonkey, friend or foe?
If you're on a budget, that's all you got. When you get to a point in your organization where you can spend, it's like SurveyMonkey is a do-it-yourself approach. I mean, do-it-yourself approach to change your tire, to do your oil. It only gets to be a certain amount of skills that you can do on your own. Yes, you can use YouTube. But when you go to a mechanic, he or she will have a skill set, a bunch of tools in their toolbox, ideas, experience. These are things that a mechanic has that you don't as a do-it-yourselfer. SurveyMonkey is a tool. It's an entry-level tool for someone who just wants to do their own thing. And sometimes the extent of organizations' budgets, that's all it leans to. It leans to having someone to have the skill set to use that tool. Sometimes it may be better to have that person work on something else and then spend the time that that person's going to use their budget to have a professional look at your vehicle. And this way, there could be that objective sense. And even just having a casual conversation, 20-30 minutes about your research methodology, how you're going to speak to your audience, the types of questions you're going to ask, the limits of them. And maybe a survey may not be the best way to understand your problem, especially if your sample size is really small. If you're just looking at 20 people, there's other approaches that can be used. And SurveyMonkey may not be the best approach to use. And these are good things. These are conversations to have that we should be having more often than not. And going to the low-hanging fruit and thinking that you've done your research with a SurveyMonkey, you know, possibly, but there could be other approaches that could be used. And having that conversation with a mechanic is a good thing to have.
And this brings me to from your area of comfort to your area of discomfort. As someone who is, you know, very experienced in market research, is a very good presenter and communicator, when you joined IABC or you looked at the world of communication, was there, and because I'm focused on communications, marketing, social media, content, etc., was there one part of it that you looked at, I know where I need to improve, or there's one area that frightens me ever so slightly and I want to, you know, throw it at the wall and see what sticks with giving it a go, and it's, you know, IABC is a good place to do that. So was there something that was that I really want to give it a go, or I really want to, you know, I'm not confident in this yet, and maybe this is a great learning place.
I've had the privilege and the honor of meeting people at IABC, and I still get nervous meeting new people and putting yourself out there, and having to meet new people and ask them and have conversations with them about whatever it is. that still makes me anxious, still makes me nervous. But it's good. It's good for you. It puts hair in my chest, so to speak. It expands my mind. It allows me to get to know more people, and that's what I enjoy. That takes me out of my comfort zone, meeting new people, and forming relationships with them, and I enjoy it.
Yeah, I have to say that building the social, the real world social network through the Communications Association has been just one of my absolutely favorite bits, plus being honored to with requests for me to present, and I am always honored when it's a room full of your peers or people who actually know what you do and they're willing to listen and they have good takeaways or they ask really good questions. It's very easy, and I really enjoy going to talk to third-party associations or organizations which are not in the communication sphere, mm-hmm. and that's great. But speaking to people who know what they're talking about and who can challenge me or just reinforce what I'm saying, it makes me want to work harder to go, well, one, I don't want to look an idiot in front of these people. Two, I want to impress them. Three, I want people to be able to walk away and have at least one or two things that they can apply in their day immediately, or something that validates what they're already doing.
And we, you and I have had these conversations about how people generally flock to people who they know. And one of the things that I've learned in IABC is to get yourself out of that comfort zone and go surround yourself with people you don't, because those group of people who you know will still be there.
True. True. And I'll give it to IABC. At every event, there is a dine around. And if there's anything I ever give a piece of advice to people is not only go to a dine around and go with people you don't know, but if there are people that you do know, try and sit at the other end of the table and speak to the people that you don't normally do, because otherwise you end up sat at one table with your mate next to you and you two talk and everyone else talks over there.
And then another thing that I've learned with IABC and had the privilege going down with the leadership track with you is we've heard this conversation before about how IABC provides us leadership opportunities to their chapter leaders. Wonderful if you have the opportunity to travel and take upon these leadership experiences, if you can make schedule for yourself to go in February and in May to Dare to Lead and to Leadership Institute. I would do that. And going down the leadership track, IABC has invested in us both, has invested in our counterparts as well in other chapters. Conversation you've heard me say once before is, are we going to stop going to these events once the chapters and once IABC stops paying for them? And the only way that these sort of programs, these services, like Dare to Lead is a program. It's a program put together by volunteers just like us. And if we stop going to them, then this program and these sort of experiences, Dan and I would have never met. Our counterparts would have never met. So now I kind of have to put my money where my mouth is, and I have to continue this sort of this journey that you and I have gone. And I plan on not stopping, because IABC invested in us and it's our responsibility to keep on going.
I'm going to get something out. Hold on. Just wait there a sec. So there's two things that I've got in my office behind me. One is, in fact, I don't know where the other picture is. I actually have somewhere here, honestly, there's the picture of when we first met. I've got it over here, right? So I have here a picture of when we first met in 2016-17.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it was in Canmore, and it's a picture of us outside the hotel, which I can never remember the name of, in Camel. And there's Sue, there's Tony Plater, there's
Jeanette.
Jeanette's looking super
Maya.
Happy. And there's Kathleen and
Angela.
And there's you stood next to me. Bear in mind, this was the second day we'd met. And there's Gary and Allison, me, and then you. And you're hiding behind a tree. Why are you hiding behind a tree?
I have absolutely no idea why that happened. I have no idea. I couldn't find a space. Every all the spots were
I'm at the back, but you're hiding behind a tree. And then go forwards 2 years. Going forwards, 2 years.
I paid for that. I think that was the one I had to pay for my LI experience. Did I pay for that one?
Did you?
I know I paid for one out of my own pocket.
You paid for Dare to Lead this year, didn't you?
You
didn't
yes.
pay to go to America.
Yeah, I did.
You did?
I did. I paid to go to LI on my own.
Wow.
Yeah, so ba-bang.
Maybe I'll do that.
Just once. I mean,
maybe I'll do it. Do you know what? Leadership Institute, if you are a member of a professional organization that doesn't have a leadership track and it's just PD on its own, honestly, have a word with them and get that leadership element in there as well, because for the development of people as future leaders of the industry, future leaders of the association or the organization, what it is critical. And I'm looking at this picture of us in San Diego. And this is everyone from Canada West in this picture. Going from the one of you hiding behind you're behind the tree on that one, to this one. And I'm just thinking, look how we've changed in the period of 2 years. And dear listener, I'm going to explain this. In the first picture, when we were both new to leadership in Canada West, we're both at the back of the picture. And 2 years later, we're on the front row. There is something psychological about 2 years later, and both of us are on the front row of this picture.
It's been absolutely 100% worth it. Have you heard? You know the caliber of speakers that they've had at our events. They pay, IBC's paid money for these people. And the takeaways is just, even if you only remember a small fraction of those takeaways, to pass that message along to somebody else is just, we keep investing in ourselves. And this is something that's going ongoing, and I want to be part of this for quite some time. So yeah, let's do it. Let's grow. Let's keep changing as people. Let's stand for ethics. Let's stand for professionalism as an organization.
You are super passionate about what you do professionally in this area where you give back, and it all comes from this joining this association, which has helped you. It's like you've seen the value of it and how it's changed you as a person and the doors that it's opened for relationships, not necessarily, oh, I'm joining because it's going to bring me work, or I'm joining just because I should do. You've joined it and you've grown as a person, and you've got, you know, a new community, a different community in different parts of the world who go, I should get in touch with Roland because dot, dot, dot. Or I wonder how Roland's doing. I wonder if he's beaten his time of his latest half marathon, 5, 10, 50, 100K run. I wonder how many shoes he's been through. Does he have sore feet? Whatever it is. Ted Rubin says it best. And I bring Ted Rubin up a lot. But Ted Rubin says it best. He talks about return on relationship. It doesn't matter what you do in the world. It doesn't matter what you bring to the table. But during that time, adding value to that relationship is the key, personally, professionally.
100%. And thank you, it's true.
And on that note, Roland, thank you so much for joining me on Cafe Soko.
It was good. It was my honor.
No, it was mine.
Onward and upward, buddy.
Fist bump.
Yep.
I do hope that you really enjoyed that episode. Thank you for listening. A big thank you to my guest, Roland Pajares, for taking his time to come to our recording space and taking part in the podcast. A big thank you also to Joachim Karud for producing such fantastic music. There'll be a new episode of Cafe Soko very soon.